All right, we are back with you now here on 1320. It is just about 3 minutes after 9 in studio this morning. We have Chef Norbert and Chef Deb from My Chef Lara. Good morning.
Good morning, John.
All right. Last month, we missed you both because I had to go to a cable advisory committee meeting last month over at City Hall with the mayor. Paul did the show last month, so I'm back, and welcome back, Deb.
Well, thank you.
I think you were missing in action for the last couple of months here.
Yeah.
So glad to have you with us back again.
Oh, it's good to be back.
Always nice to see you and Norbert as well.
Yeah, we missed you too, Dominic. We missed you too.
I tell you, I don't know. I know Paul Healy tried to do okay last month with the show, but he's no me, right?
I made him ring the bell quite often.
Exactly. Yeah, you had to figure out the bell had to come anyways. Before we get into a lot of stuff that is going on at My Chef Lara, the fall is here. You've got, boy, I tell you, didn't feel like fall the last couple of days, you know, with the temperatures this past week in the 20s, but yesterday in the mid-60s, what are we, back into Indian summer already, basically?
Yeah, well, we had a little frost, and now we're in Indian summer.
Exactly. Okay, because we'll talk about that in a little bit more with Jim Corbin in just a couple of moments. Last night, I could not make it to the knife class again last night. Things, you say, went pretty well up on Hope Street.
Yeah, absolutely. We had a total of 11 people there.
Mm-hmm.
It was co-sponsored by Urban Greens and by Stark. And they were pretty good. They brought their knives, and we had a good crowd. We had good, knowledgeable people. There were 8 women, 3 guys. The guys actually were also very good.
Yeah, they were. They were very good.
Yeah. And we cut a lot of veggies, and they learned to handle the knives. That was very, very nice. And we do another show, not a show, but we do another class in coming in January.
Mm-hmm.
At Stock, we make stocks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Stocks and broths.
So we'll teach people how to make stocks
and this
broth.
Is the people tell people where it's actually located now.
That's on Hope Street on the east side of Providence. Next to the Italian restaurant Pizzico. Most likely a lot of your listeners know that. And it is a culinary store. It's a kitchen store with a lot of nice things in
she
there.
She has beautiful things in there.
Yeah,
yeah.
Who runs that now? Who's the woman that runs
Jen.
It?
Jen.
Jen
Dane.
She's been running that for a while, you said, right?
Yes.
Yeah, she's been running that for a while.
She's been there for at least 3-4 years now.
Okay, yeah. So that's good. And, of course, now the other thing, before we get into other things here this morning, When do you guys starting up the next Mystery Theaters over in Rehoboth? That starts up in 2016 again, right?
That will most likely, we are working on having one in December.
Okay.
If that works, then everybody will know shortly. But we are trying to make one happen at Valentine's Day.
Okay.
And so that's our plan.
Mm-hmm. And that all of that information will be on My Chef Lara's website, your website down the line.
www.mychef.lara.com.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of Lara, how is Ms. Lara doing today?
Lara is doing very well, and I hope she is listening.
Mm-hmm.
She promised to listen today because she couldn't make it.
Yeah.
And
a recent newlywed.
That's right.
Right, a recent newlywed.
That's right, and we had a party. She had her big party, and we helped do the cooking for her party. I said, if you have a personal chef business, the least you can do is get a party out of it,
Of course, you got to.
So we had a big party. It was a chilly day, but everybody had a blast because part of the entertainment for the party is we had a chop-a-tition.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we had 4 teams. And it was friends and family, and so there were 4 teams of 3 people. Help me out, Norbert. What was the mystery basket? It was a pork tenderloin, tomato.
Yep. Trail mix.
Trail mix was the
mystery ingredient.
Oh, nice.
And we had cooked faro. Yes.
Cooked faro. And they created 4 really special different dishes out of it. It was very lovely. They all did a great job. And we had a blast. It was so much fun.
That's great.
We had the judges' table. And it's funny because you see the pictures and everybody was having a great time, but everybody was really bundled up because it was a very chilly day. But another thing that came out of that party was we have, we discovered the fourth soup for soup night.
Oh, you did?
Yes. So Laura had...
Not announcing yet.
We're not announcing it yet.
Maybe later in the show.
Okay.
Maybe later.
We're not announcing the names of the soups yet, but... The fourth soup, we were deciding, we've been going back and forth about different soups, what'll we include, and we discovered our very popular fourth soup that we're going to add to soup night.
Nice. Yeah, those are always a great event as well, because the soups that you make are just so mouth-watering. I think you did make some here for us. You heated up some stuff a few months ago or last year for
us. Last year, Dominic.
I think you made the pumpkin soup, I think it was.
That is correct.
The squash soup or whatever.
Squash soup, but it was the squash and apple.
Butternut squash.
I remember that because Nicole made that. And when I tasted it, I came as a guest because I was working with my chef Laura at the time. And I remember that all the soups last year were fantastic. And Nicole, that was Nicole's specialty.
Okay. Yeah, we haven't seen Nicole in a while. How's Miss Nicole doing?
She moved to Massachusetts.
Okay.
And she still has the My Chef Laura chef's coat. Yes.
And, and of course, Chef Laura is doing well.
Oh, yeah, she is.
She's doing well.
Laura, we had a chapter meeting on Sunday. Mm-hmm. We were able to have two new chefs joining the chapter, one from New Hampshire and the other one from the North Shore of Boston. And we were able to meet them and talk to them, and they were happy to have that chapter meeting there.
Nice.
Yes.
Very good.
Yeah.
All right. We have Chef Deb and Chef Norbert with us this morning in our chef's table. And right now we have meteorologist Jim Corwin also back with us once again. Jim?
Well, Don, we have a couple of sprinkles and light showers centered just to the east of Providence, also in the Taunton area. And by the way, hello to the chefs this morning. We've got the rain very light, so it's not a big deal, but it's enough just to wet the ground, really, in a few spots. But we're going to have just mostly cloudy skies throughout the day. A little bit of sun this afternoon in spots. High temperatures about 60 or so not exactly cold and not exactly warm, kind of right in the middle. Then tonight, falling back to 50, and then it's back to sun and clouds. The warmest afternoon of the week coming up tomorrow. It looks like we're going to reach the upper 60s, might even quickly, briefly nudge 70 for a time, but also a shower late in the day into the evening. And then the cooler weather comes back in the 50s for Friday and Saturday for highs. Probably get another frost on Saturday morning in many outlying areas, in other words, not in the city locations. And then it looks like a few more showers on Sunday. So, again, typical late October weather.
Okay. Sounds good, Jim. We'll talk to you back in about 30 minutes.
Okay.
All right. That is now coming up to 11 minutes after the hour 9 here on this Wednesday morning. It is the third Wednesday of the month, and that means our professional chefs are in studio as always. So a few things to talk about this morning. Very important things being fall. You've got, as you said, you've got some soups very popular this time. You've got things that will stick to your ribs, basically. You've got the soup night coming up in November. Tell me a little bit about this chop-a-tition. Is that what you call it?
Chop-a-tition.
Chop-a-tition.
Yeah.
Yeah, the chop-a-tition is actually a event which we have created. That is, my chef Lara has created this event for corporations to do team building and have fun and create a challenging atmosphere for approximately 2 hours. We have teams of three. One is the chef, the other one is the sous chef, the third one is a recorder, and they have to work together as a team. So the chef cannot go away from his table. The sous chef is able to get something out of the pantry. So there are a couple of rules, and the recorder has to make the menu what they are creating with all of the secret ingredients. Mm-hmm. They have 25 minutes time. They have a burner and a gas burner. They have a skillet, and they have spices, and they have a pantry. And they have to communicate. They have to play their roles and then come up with a very nice dish. So we had
this now the third time. The first time we did it, there was one team, and I remember that specifically. That team had by far the best chef, but she took over the knife of the sous chef. She was doing everything herself, and she was not communicating with the recorder at all. Mm-hmm. So everybody in the audience was like, wow, what? This is not a team. This is not a team. And that's the message which mm-hmm. should come across. But they won the food challenge because it was the best tasting food. But on the other side, it was not a team. And that is exactly what we are trying to get across to corporations, having fun for 2 hours mm-hmm. and then have a game show like this. It is a little bit like Chopped. However, it is a team event with three people, and everybody plays his or her role in this event. Mm-hmm. And we did this now on October 3rd with all four teams, 12 people in the teams, and three judges. And it was a fun evening, a fun afternoon, although it was pretty cold that day. But we had a lot of fun. Yes.
The other thing that when you were talking about that is, you know, with all these types of foods and stuff, I know we talked about this a while back, that you have all of these different things that are going on. But briefly, I know when you first started here over a year ago, you kind of came into the program. A lot of people didn't really realize what My Chef Lara does. We talk about it in the past. We first met you a couple of years ago at the food tasting event that was sponsored by the Literacy Center over at the Attleboro Lodge of Elks. Basically, I know you had your own company for a mm-hmm. while, and then you were recruited here, and you've been very happy with My Chef Lara. Little background on what My Chef Lara does, for the people, the consumers out there.
Sure. So the main thing that we do is we create meals for people who are busy, who maybe are recovering from an illness or surgery, who are trying to change their diet, but they don't know quite how to do that. Elderly folks. And what we do is we go through a process of finding out exactly what the person likes and doesn't like. But we create meals in someone's home. We make 20, 30, even up to 40 meals at a time. We package them and put them in the freezer so that all you have to do to have a really good home-cooked meal that's completely customized to whatever your personal needs are is take it out of the freezer, put it in your refrigerator, and the next day warm it mm-hmm. up. So everything is done for you, and you get to eat really healthy and a really tasteful meal. There's a process that we go through. When we first meet a client, then we have an interview, and we really learn a lot. We really dig down into what they like. You know, do you like parsnips? You know, mm-hmm. we have a whole questionnaire that we do, and it's we sit there and we talk about it and explain our whole process. We come up with a menu. And then after we have a menu, then we send it to the client, and they can approve or disapprove. So they can say, yes, everything looks great, except, you know, I'm not really in the mood for beef stew this time. Can we do a chicken dish there? And then we come back, and when we settle on a menu, on the cooking day, we arrive with our own equipment, all the groceries, and we cook like crazy for a few hours, mm-hmm. and we package everything up, and you're left with really great food. So that's the main focus right. of what a personal chef does. We also do parties. We do dinner parties. In fact, dinner parties are one of the things that I think it's great that they're personal chefs, because if you have a dinner party at your home, I'm sure you've had this experience. You're in the kitchen a lot, mm-hmm. and you're kind of stressed out, and it's a hassle, and you want to be with your guests, and you want to enjoy it, but you also need to make sure that the food is taken care of. You could hire a caterer, but most caterers don't want to do that small of a right. job. If you have a dinner party for 8 people, most caterers don't really want to do a job that small. And if they will do the job that small, they're going to charge you a very lot of money for sure. it. And that's another place that personal chefs really come in. We can go in and do a beautiful dinner party for you. You'll feel like you're eating in a restaurant, but you're in your own home. You're in the comfort of your home. You can have a couple glasses of wine. You can sit there as long as you want. Mm-hmm. Nobody's going to rush you. And I've done a couple dinner parties for families with very, very small babies. And they didn't have to worry about leaving the baby at home with a babysitter. you know, the baby was on a baby monitor, and they were right there. So those are things that we do. We do bigger parties, and we are developing, working with, doing corporate events. And one thing I want to say about the Chopetition, this also would make a great party. Oh. If you wanted to have a party that was really different at your house, this would make a really fun party for people.
The way you were announcing it and saying it, really describing it, really does sound like fun.
Yeah.
But going back for a second, and it's basically what the client, the customer wants to have. And it doesn't matter if it's a vegan or, regular meal and stuff like that. But you also bring all, if you're doing a backyard summer party, most of the time, a lot of times, you will also bring all the essentials.
Yeah.
Sometimes you'll take a bartender or something, once in a while. You'll take the tables and linens and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Is there something that My Chef Lara doesn't do?
We can't cook somewhere where there's no kitchen.
That's good point.
Because at this point, we don't have a commercial kitchen that we cook out of. So we have to, when we go to a place, we have to cook at the client's home.
Right.
And so if we need to go to a place with a kitchen. A caterer might be able to do a function in a place that doesn't have a kitchen because they just bring the food hot and can serve it from there. But we can't do that. We do need a kitchen in order to do what we do. But other than that, we're pretty versatile. We haven't run into anything yet that I can think of.
Now,
do
you guys end up, if the client wants you, do you end up joining the party at all?
Only after everything is done, the customer is happy, and we cleaned up the premises and brought the garbage out. And,
you even do that.
Oh, yeah, we even do that, yes. And the customer is happy, and then, sometimes we have a glass of wine with him because he is really happy. Yeah. But before that, no, not really.
Yeah, you're working. No, you're
we are working, and we are very concentrated while we are doing that. Yes.
Yeah. Our main focus is making sure our customers are really well taken care of.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's why you've been very successful all these years, and hopefully in the new year it will go the same way. That's for sure. Even better. That's for sure. You also have a conference coming up very shortly in Providence.
Yeah, not very shortly. It is in July of next year. And that is the National Conference of the United States Personal Chef Association. Mm-hmm. The National Conference was last year. This year it was in San Antonio. And last year it was in Palm Beach in California. And Laura McDougall, who is also sometimes here on the show, she was nominated the Chef of the Year in San Antonio for the United States Personal Chef Association. And My Chef Lara was the year before in California, in Palm Beach. We did not win, but this time we are on home turf. We are expecting for the show approximately 150 to 200 personal chefs coming to Providence. And there will be 30 to 35 sessions of all different kinds of knowledge transferred to the personal chefs, how to do a brisket, how to do a New England clam chowder, how to use a particular piece of equipment, what to do with certain spirits, how to pair wine with this or that. So the whole spiel about personal chefing is exhibited there, and that conference is the very, very first time in Providence, Rhode Island. It's in the convention center. And we are very, very proud as the New England chapter to have that conference here because we get national recognition now.
It's on your home. It's basically on your home turf, is like
absolutely.
You said. Absolutely. Right in your backyard.
We are so looking forward to that one. Yes.
Yeah.
It'll be fun.
How many guests are they looking at to get, hopefully, down the line? They look at also people, public are coming in as well to see this.
Yes, you can do that. You pay a little higher price because you're not a member of the USPCA, but it is open to the public. And you can get exactly the same type of courses out of that conference than anybody else, yes.
Yeah, as it nears the time of the conference, if people who are listening are interested, they should go on the USPCA website, and you'll be able to find links to the listing of classes, because it's tremendous. You can learn so much. If you're interested in food, if you're interested in cooking, you can learn so much at these conferences about all sorts of different ingredients and, like Norbert was saying, different equipment, how to use this, how to use that. technique. We're as personal chefs, we're really interested all the time in educating ourselves further. I just yesterday I found a seminar that my doctor actually was running about diabetics and nutrition. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to do that. We're always educating ourselves mm-hmm. on things. So if anybody in the audience is interested, then go to the USPCA website.
Yeah, USPCA.com.
Yes.
Yeah, that's what I thought it was. Yeah, I think you guys had talked about that in the past as well. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of things going on now, as you said. You've got let's take one of them at a time. We've got chicken soup making.
We were talking about making
Deb's
chicken
specialty.
Soup.
She needs it because she has a cough for a couple of days.
I have a cold. Yeah, I've had a cold for a while. We were talking about making chicken soup and broth, and everybody kind of has their own specialties or whatever. And when I was in culinary school, of course you learn how to make bone broths and mm-hmm. all that sort of thing. But for the most part, for home cooks, a bone broth isn't probably what they're going to do, because right. you got to find somebody who's going to sell you the bones, or mm-hmm. you have to save up the bones yourself in your freezer until you get enough. But making a really nice chicken soup, you know, it's not hard. It's a little time consuming. So all you need to do is take a chicken and either buy it cut up from the store, or get a whole chicken and cut it up yourself, and then cover it with water over an inch over the right. over the actual chicken. And I like to add my favorite aromatics that I add to it. I add onion, celery, and carrots, which is the classic mirepoix. Mm-hmm. So classic mirepoix, the ratio is one part celery, one part carrot, two parts onions. So it's twice as much onions as each of the other components, so carrots and celery. Mm-hmm. I also love to add some sprigs of thyme. I add whole peppercorns, and I also add garlic that's not peeled, because I find that if you chop up garlic into it, I don't like the flavor as much. It's a really mellow flavor. If you put some whole garlic cloves in there, don't even bother peel them. And it imparts just an undertone of that warmth and earthiness that garlic has. And then you simmer it. Don't boil it. That's a mistake that people make. It takes longer to cook if you just bring it up to a boil and then turn it back down, so that the top is moving a bit. So the water is moving, but not boiling, like bubbling. You don't want it bubbling. You want it to simmer, a nice low simmer. It takes a while. But when the meat is starting to fall off the bone, you've made yourself a wonderful, wonderful base for soup.
So. Yeah, nothing like a nice chicken soup at any time of day. Now, as we're getting into all these comfort type foods, mm-hmm. The one thing that, you know, it's also good with that. I mean, you could just have that by itself. Yep. You know, you can put potatoes in it or whatever you want. My wife does a terrific chicken soup as well. But mm-hmm. one thing that I haven't made this in a while, and I should make it down the line, is a nice meatloaf. You know, always good to have
meatloaf.
A meatloaf. Now, in your meatloaf, what mm-hmm. do you usually put in your meatloaf?
So for the meat, first of all, for meatloaf, for the meat, I usually do half pork and half beef.
Okay.
Occasionally I buy the meatloaf mix, but to be perfectly honest, I have a thing about veal. Mm-hmm. I feel sort of bad about how they mm-hmm. produce the veal. So unless you're buying it from somebody like our friend Patrick Beck, and you know that
he was here a few months ago.
Yes. If you know the veal is treated humanely, then that's one thing. But the supermarket stuff I don't tend to buy. Mm-hmm. So I use half pork, and the pork, one of the things about the pork, if you work all the ingredients, and I learned this from America's Test Kitchen. God bless America's Test Kitchen. They're fantastic. I've learned so much from them. The pork, if you work all your other ingredients into the pork first and then add the beef and work it in, the beef has a tendency to get tough when you work it too much. And the pork doesn't do that. And the meat is softer when it's ground. And so you can add everything into the pork and then add your beef, and your meatloaf comes out much more tender than if it's 100% beef, or if you mix everything in with the beef at first. So that's pointer number one.
Sure.
I make, it's called a panada, actually, technically is the culinary term. The panada is, it's the milk and breadcrumb mixture that you make that kind of binds it together.
Yeah.
And then egg. So I use regular breadcrumbs, uh-huh. dry breadcrumbs. I don't use panko for this purpose. Okay. I know some people do. I prefer the dry breadcrumbs because it has a much finer texture. Uh-huh. And then I add egg and some milk to it. Now, if you're lactose intolerant and you don't want to add milk, you could actually add some stock to it. You could add beef stock or you could add chicken stock.
Okay.
And if you don't eat gluten or wheat, then a replacement, believe it or not, again, America's Test Kitchen, believe it or not, a replacement for the breadcrumbs and not the same quantity, you'd use less of them, is potato flakes. Like if you were making instant mashed potatoes. And it helps to hold the meatloaf together. But you could use gluten-free breadcrumbs, sure. but those potato flakes, it makes the meatloaf, again, it's very tender. Mm-hmm. It's a very tender binder to hold together the meatloaf. Mm. And then you put in whatever your flavoring right. ingredients that you like.
Yeah, I always followed my mom's recipe, putting the ketchup in it and all, you know, uh-huh. make it nice and moist yeah. and stuff uh-huh. like that. And the raisins.
Yeah. Oh, you put raisins
in. Yeah, put raisins in it. I used to put the raisins in it, and that's been a while back. But yeah, it's... something that my mom, God rest her soul, who did, she was a great cook, a nice Italian cook.
I was going to say raisins, that's Italian
Yeah,
for
exactly.
Sure. That's Southern Italian for sure.
Yeah, but it was always good. And one of my mom's favorite recipes, in fact, my dad still does it every once in a while. He hasn't done it in a while, is he'll make his eggplant parm.
Ooh,
okay.
Nice.
Now, and my wife and I did it a few years ago. It came out pretty well. You know, we did the same thing. Now, something like that. We were just talking about this the other day. What would be a better thing? I mean, would you fry the eggplant for, you know, put it in the egg and the milk and all that? Mm-hmm. Or would you fry it or would you put the whole thing and bake it instead? Because I've heard other people do it. They do it either way.
You know, I have actually done it without frying it.
Yeah.
I've done it frying it and I've done it baking the eggplant. Mm-hmm. You use less fat when you bake the eggplant. I like it baked best myself. Mm-hmm. But the one problem with that is sometimes it's not quite as tender.
Yeah.
If you fry it, it comes out nice and tender.
Yeah.
And if you bake it, you lose some of the moisture. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes it's not as tender if your eggplant isn't really, really fresh.
Yeah.
It doesn't come out quite as well.
I know when I've done it in the past a couple of times, even my mom used to do it, lower the heat. So, the oil or whatever you're going to use it, tends to splatter. And I remember years ago, I'm talking about 60s or 70s, my mom used to have a splatter screen on top of the frying pan.
Yeah.
I don't know. Do they still run those?
Does
Jan still have them at that stock?
Yeah,
you bet.
Probably.
Yeah, because that's something that I still remember to this day, and mm-hmm. I still can see it. I'm wondering if my dad still has it going back to the 70s. But yeah, that's something. But like I said, I've got to do it one of these days. I've got to make the eggplant again.
One thing you want to watch, actually, if you're frying something and the oil is too cool, it actually absorbs more.
Yeah, it
does. They've done tests where the foods that are cooked, fried in the proper temperature, actually absorb almost no oil.
Hmm.
They'll measure the oil before they put it into the frying vessel, and then when they take it out, they've only lost like 2 teaspoons of the oil. Hmm. So we have this idea of fried food as necessarily being unhealthy.
Yeah.
It's not. So just don't turn it down too much or you're going to get greasy eggplant.
But you don't want to do that. And always remember as you're doing that is to dry them off in the paper towel in between layers. And then you can put them in your pan and stuff like that.
When another trick, which I'm sure you know being Italian, is salt them. If you put salt on them, then it draws the moisture out of the eggplant. So you let it sit for a little while and then you can pat it dry with your paper towel.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Because I'm not a salt person. I know there's salt on everything that you eat anyways, but that's something to think about.
Yeah.
That'd be cool.
And you could even rinse it off actually.
Yeah.
If you
don't
want the salt in the food.
Right.
If you're concerned about that. Although when you pat the moisture off, the salt is in the moisture that's on the surface of the eggplant. So you're mostly getting rid of it. You actually could do a quick rinse and then pat it off.
Easy enough.
Yeah.
We are here with Chef Deb and Chef Norbert. We got a couple of other things to let people know about. We'll do this and that and much more coming up right after these breaks.
Do you love a parade? Well, sir, a Halloween parade is set to take place on Sunday, October 25th at precisely 12 o'clock p.m., starting at the Attleboro Norton Line to follow Route 123 to St. Mary's Church in Norton, Massachusetts. the kids can dress up in their Halloween costumes if they like and catch armfuls of candy. For more information about this family-friendly event, visit the web at www.nortonparksandrec.com.
Welcome back to The Dog Show. Up next, we have Satchmo. Satchmo is a member of the Shelter Pet Group.
That's right, a group known especially for their couch-snuggling, ball-chasing, face-licking, and, of course, companionship. Now, let's see him in action.
Look how he makes eye contact with his person.
That's actually known as the treat stare.
How intuitive, and now he appears to be excitedly turning in circles.
Ah, the happy dance so common with this group.
But really, the best way to know an amazing shelter pet like Satchmo is to meet one.
Visit theshelterpetproject.org today. Adopt.
Brought to you by Maddie's Fund, the Humane Society of the United States, and the Ad Council.
Clean out your closet and share the warmth with those in need. The Duffy Pool Funeral Home Winter Coat Drive will accept donations of new or gently used winter coats from October the 24th right straight through to December 12th. A winter coat bin will be set up for your convenience at Duffy Pool Funeral Home, located at 20 Peck Street in Attleboro. The coats will then be given to families during the week of December 18th through the 25th at the St. Joseph's Food Cellar, located on Linden Street. Thank you for joining Duffy Pool Funeral Home in assisting those in our community that are truly in need this winter. The First United Methodist Church, located on the corner of Route 120 and Route 1 in North Attleboro, will open its annual pumpkin patch on October the 4th. Pumpkins of all shapes and sizes can be picked from this great pumpkin patch on the hill until October 30th. The patch will be open Saturdays from 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. and on Sundays through Fridays from noon to 7. For more information, please call 508-695-695. 9683. It's the time of the year for the annual Fall Rummage Sale, to be held at the Central Congregational Church, located on Commonwealth Avenue in Attleboro Falls. This event typically features a wide array of fall and winter clothing, coats, shoes, boots, and so much more, including but certainly not limited to kitchenware, linens, gifts, and decorations. This three-day event will run from Thursday, October the 22nd, to Saturday the 24th. For more information, call 508-699-7700.
All right, we are back at 9:35. We're talking with Chef Deb and Chef Norbert. Chef Norbert just stepped out of the room for a quick recipe thing that he's doing in a microwave.
He's heating up one of the... wonderful other home remedies for a cold.
Yeah.
And I think I'm going to let him do the big reveal when he gets back. So,
you know, the other thing that I know that that a lot of people around this time, because you see a lot of pumpkins, the baked soup in a pumpkin.
Yes.
That is such a delicious
meal. It's so
good
and it's so fun.
It is.
You know, it's such a fun thing to do and it's so unexpected. A lot of people have never seen this. Now, you want to be careful what kind of pumpkin you get. And this right now is exactly when you can do it because the sugar pumpkins have a very short season. The jack-o'-lantern pumpkins don't really have that much flavor. Their flavor isn't that great. They're bred to be nice, big jack-o'-lantern pumpkins.
Unless you have it on your front step and all the squirrels are eating
anyways. I think squirrel taste buds are probably a little different than human ones. It must be. But find yourself a nice sugar pumpkin and then cut off the top, like if you were making a jack-o'-lantern, out of it and scoop the seeds out. And then in that bowl that the pumpkin makes for you, then if you add, what I love to do is caramelize onions. Like if you are making a French onion soup, I caramelize onions and I put them in there with some broth. I usually do chicken broth, but you can do a mixture of chicken and beef broth. And I add some cubes of toasted bread, like croutons, and grated cheese, and put the top on. And you know what is good in that, too, is a little bit of ground mustard powder. And you mix it in. It gives it a little bit more zip to the flavor. And then you can put the top on and put it in the oven and bake it. And I would say a 350 oven. And bake it until the pumpkin gets soft. Don't go too far or it'll split and then you'll end up with a mess in your oven. But bake it until the pumpkin is soft. So that takes quite a while. It's like a good hour in the oven. And when you take it out and put it on the table, take the top off and then you serve it and scoop some of the pumpkin into each bowl. So you have the soup. inside the pumpkin, and then you have some of the pumpkin flesh. And it's such a good, and it's fun. People are yeah. always like, wow, look at that. It's so cool. And it'd be fun to do on Halloween.
It really would be, yeah.
For your dinner on Halloween.
And while you're having that, the jack-o'-lanterns can be in your house with the lights shut down.
Right.
And, you know, like,
right.
Well, Norbert is back, and all I know is I can smell some great aromas out of this cup next to me.
Yes, and that is a very famous German mulled wine.
Mm-hmm.
It's called Glühwein. And it's a remedy for almost everything. And I would suggest that Deb has at least one or two zips of that wine to help
under
her,
her
with
other
her
than
cough.
Her Bailey's Irish Cream lines this time.
This one is by far better.
Mm-hmm.
And it is normally... it is warm,
yeah.
Dominic. It is warm. It is normally done during the Christmas time, and it starts in end of October, mm-hmm. early November, when the markets are up in Germany during the evening. It's cold, of course, and then people start to have that Glühwein. And now take a sip and let me know what you think about it.
All right, I'm going to try this now. Very hot?
It is hot. It is hot. And it has to be hot.
Oh, that is good.
What are you saying?
It's very good.
It is very good. I know. Extensive testing over the weekend.
Yeah, and they don't, and folks. Then they don't have to worry about twisting my arm. I try everything anyway.
And
wow, that is, what am I tasting in there? This
aha.
That is a really really good tasting. I mean, it's not your regular. There's something in there, red wine in there, but. I'm tasting. Yeah. I got to try it again.
You have to try it again.
Breakfast of champions over
why
here.
Not? Yeah, you're really kidding.
And there is a recipe.
Ooh,
the recipe is on
good.
Is on our website, okay. www.mychef.lara.com, and it's the mulled wine.
All right, I've got your website on now. Whereabouts do we have it here? And I've got the main page on for My Chef Lara.
Yep.
Boy, that is good. Oh, my God.
Yeah, this is good.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So the German Glühwein, what you do is you start with two medium lemons, and you take two medium oranges, and then you peel it. And you peel the oranges, and you peel the lemon, not getting into the white, and you put them into a pot. And then... after you are done with that, you cut the lemons in half and the oranges in half, and then you juice them. And
mm-hmm.
that you put into the pot. And then you put a cup and a half of sugar in there. Yes, I know sugar. But after that is in there, you put a cup and a half of water in there. And then you make a little pocket with cloves and with cardamom. And then you put them into cheesecloth, and you put that in there. And then you put not red wine yet. And then you put cinnamon sticks.
Mm-hmm.
And then you heat it up, and you boil it for approximately 25 minutes until the water and the liquid is reduced by 30%. And then you pour wine into it. And then you let it not boil at all, but you just simmer it to a point that you see the first bubbles coming up. And then you stop. That's it. And then you put a little bit of brandy into it to
uh-huh.
get it to taste better.
I always taste something good with brandy in it anyways.
And, and that is what you have. Mm. That's the result.
It's the winter version of sangria.
Yeah, you're not kidding. That's exactly what I was going to say. It tastes like a little bit of a sangria, but it's even better than a sangria.
Yes.
Boy, I tell you, if you have a cold,
yes.
or if you have something, that will fix you up overnight probably.
It will.
If you have a full cup like I have in front of me, that will fix you right up. Boy.
You were holding out on me, Norbert, all last week when I was coughing.
See?
I didn't have the lemons yet in my house.
Oh,
at
that's
that
what
time.
It was. The lemons.
It was the lemons.
And there are no markets in Providence.
No. You got a Whole Foods market right around the corner. You know,
Boy, I guess I see how I rate.
We've got meteorologist Jim Corbin, who would probably want to be here, he's joining us once again with our next check on the forecast. Boy, Jim, I tell you, this hot mulled wine is going very. I don't care what happens right about now.
Good stuff. It sounds like it's a great time. Great conversation, as always, with the chefs, and I've enjoyed it. Anyway, we've got the rain now pretty much gone. Not that there was much of it, but it has moved off to the east, and now we're dealing with just mostly cloudy skies. Have noted a few breaks of sun starting to poke through, and that's the way it's going to be throughout the late morning and afternoon. We're going to reach around 60, 61 degrees or so. Light winds, every little wind today. So as I like to call it, kind of a quiet day. Then tonight, falling back to 50, but certainly a nice mild evening for this time of the year, staying in the 50s. And then tomorrow, it's the warmest day of the week in terms of the afternoon. Temperatures reaching 68, might even not 70, and then cooler weather moving in for Friday and Saturday, but it looks dry. Good news for all the activities going on, the football games Friday evening, and of course the big game at Gillette against the New York Jets on Sunday at 1 o'clock. Could be a couple of light rain showers then, but even that doesn't look all that bad. So as I said earlier, again, very typical October weather where it's one of the 2 months of the year, really, where we have very little bad weather most of the time because of just the way the weather pattern sets up.
All right. Now, I hate to say this, but do you have any information that you'd like to share with our chefs at all?
Actually, I have a question that I've always wondered in the last few years, and you mentioned it a little while ago. What is gluten, and what, maybe I'll come as an idiot not knowing, what is the good and the bad about it when you see something is gluten-free? What is that?
Well, gluten is actually a protein that occurs in grains, but not all grains. So, for instance, wheat has gluten in it. And it's not good or bad per se on its in and of itself. The issue is that there are some people who are sensitive to it. There are some people who have what's called celiac disease, and celiac disease makes gluten almost like a poison in their system, so that it's very harmful for them to eat gluten. They can't eat certain grains, even other than wheat, have gluten in it. For instance, barley has gluten in it. Rye has some gluten in it, but the good thing about gluten is it's actually what gives bread its texture. So gluten is, like I said, it's a protein, and it helps give the bread the structure, which is why it's hard to find a good gluten-free bread. It's not an easy thing to do.
So it's actually, for most people, gluten is not an issue. It's not,
exactly.
I never see anything like, you see gluten-free, but you don't see includes gluten, like
that's right. Yeah. I mean, it for most people, it's not an issue at all. Some people are sensitive to it, so they do better if they don't eat it. But some people really, really can't eat it.
Is that kind of similar to why certain people can't eat like peanut butter or peanuts?
Exactly.
Yes, it's an allergy. Yep, exactly. Okay. It's an allergy, just like a peanut allergy would be.
So it's very rare. Most people can handle like peanuts and gluten, but some can't, and they have to find out some maybe a bad way at first.
Yes.
And then they know enough to avoid it for the rest of their life.
Yes, that's correct. You get that right.
Yeah. Well, thanks again for the information, as always, and I'll be listening. And again, quickly, again, the rain is pretty much gone. We've got just really great weather overall right through the weekend overall.
All right. Sounds good, Jim. We'll talk to you in the morning.
Okay, thanks.
All right. There you go. Jim Corbin back with us later on this morning with Dave Kane, who's Dave will be here in just about 15 minutes. There's another thing that's now I know that I will not definitely not going to be saying this word. F-E-U-E-R-Z-A-N-G-E-N-B-O-L-E. Did we mention that?
Oh, you mean the Feuerzangenbowle.
That's the word. Yeah, everybody knows that. You know that.
This
you know
is so easy. I mean,
How do you pronounce it?
Feuerzangenbowle.
Okay, say that five times fast.
Yeah, Feuerzangenbowle.
And he does, of course.
The Feuerzangenbowle is the famous sister of the German Glühwein.
Oh.
And what you do is you have a and it is for being together with friends in the evening. It is a little bit of a ceremonic thing you do when you are sitting with four friends around the table. You have in the middle, you have a pot of red wine. Well, underneath, you have a little burner.
You need a pot of red wine.
You have the red wine not boiling but simmering in the pot. And then you put a special device on top of it so that it bridges from the left corner to the right corner of the pot. And then you put this thing onto it. And this is a sugar cone.
Oh, okay.
And the sugar cone here, which I hold in my hands, is approximately 4 inches high. It has at the base, it has a diameter of 2.5 inches. And then it is solid sugar. And it goes up, and that you put onto the device. And then you pour pure rum over it.
Hello.
And then you dim the light. And then
Deb and I will be over your house.
You lit it up, and then the heat will burn the sugar, mm-hmm. and the burning sugar will go into the wine. And
Ooh.
You see the wine more or less burning on the surface, and then you drink out of that wine, of course, and that's the Feuerzangenbowle.
And that is a German? Is that, what nationality is that?
That is German.
Is Germany.
Yeah, that's
it's, for some reason, I don't know why, but it just seems like it's a Mexican Aztec thing that, you know, that you're seeing.
No.
But no, it's purely German.
Yeah, this is German heritage.
Huh. Do they do it in Scandinavia as well, or anything similar, or that you
yes,
know
Yes, there are. Yeah. Every culture has something to drink. And
they don't necessarily have a flaming drink, though.
No.
All of the cultures where it is cold, they do have something hot and it's alcoholic.
Yeah, because I noticed that being like down in Mexico, they do in the afternoon, they usually do the flaming coffees, all different types of the Italian and the Mexican coffee, Spanish. And they do this, you know, from cup to cup and the flames coming out from each.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that's that's just, if you don't drink it, it's a great show just to see it.
Yeah.
But, you know, we talked about this last year at this time. Oktoberfest.
Yeah.
Everybody said, oh, yeah, it's October. But it's really not.
No.
Tell the listeners basically the difference. Everybody thinks like, oh, it's October because it's got to be October. But that's really a myth. It's really not really the midst of October, really.
That is correct. The Oktoberfest actually ends in October.
Right.
And it is during September. Right now, the Oktoberfest,
it's over.
It's over.
Yeah.
It's over. It's done. And there was, at one time, there was in Munich, there was a show of farmers coming from all different parts of the country, and they brought their livestock there, and it was a livestock show. And then, of course, those farmers were thirsty, and they wanted to have fun because they were in the big city. And that was the original start of the Oktoberfest.
Hmm.
And that was a couple of hundred years ago. And since that time, that was every year it was celebrated, first as a show for livestock. And then after that, the livestock show became the less important part of the Oktoberfest. But it is still there. It is still there.
Mm-hmm.
And now the more important part is the beer brewing and the having fun.
The fun part, stuff
yes.
over there as well. As we're into this season, we see Deb's got an apple in front of her as well. She loves her apples. This is a good season now. You can get some really good apples, pie making crust as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I brought you a gift too because I didn't want Norbert to be the only one. It's not as exciting, but it you know.
But it's
it,
but it's it, an it apple has, anyway.
It's an apple, mm-hmm. an apple a day they say, right?
That's right.
And if you have one apple and one cup of mulled wine. Then you're going to live to be 127.
Well, hey, that's great. So I wonder if you can dunk the apple, you know, in the mulled wine.
You have a
mulled apple. You know,
there's a thought. You know? I wonder if the now we're gonna start the how they have the white sangria in the summer. Then we can do a white mulled wine, and it can have apples and cinnamon.
Yeah.
All those kind of things.
You in the sangrias, you do have the fruits all
think,
the time in
that's
there.
That's right. I think I'm going to go to my laboratory tonight. No.
The mad scientist working over here. I like the way she said it, Norbert. It's like the laboratory.
The laboratory.
The laboratory. You got it right. She's Bela Lugosi all over again.
Yeah.
Yeah, as you mentioned, as apples, it's always great. I mean, apples are good any time of the year.
And this is the peak time.
Yeah.
And there are places where you pick your own apples in this area. It's so beautiful. I mean, the just being outside at this time of year and I unfortunately this year I didn't get to go apple picking actually. The one weekend that I was free, it was Columbus Day weekend and it was so busy. We went up to the Scituate Art Festival. It was great, but there were so many people and there were so many people in all of the orchards nearby. So we didn't end up going this year, but I did want to say a word about apples because, as we're saying, it's that time of year for apples. They're at their absolute peak. There are some apples that you can only get actually right now. Honeycrisp apples, they don't grow that many Honeycrisp apples. And so they have a very short season. So enjoy them while you can. That's a wonderful eating apple. Macintosh apples are, you get it all year. You'll see a Macintosh apple from last fall in July in a grocery store. But the quality of them is nothing like what they are right now. That's a Macintosh apple that I brought you. Happens to be my favorite kind of apple because I like that kind of tart. I like that sort of tart sweet apple.
Yeah. Do you like the Golden Delicious?
I do. And you bring up a good point because one of the things that I've learned over the years, when you're making an apple pie or if you're making an apple crisp or one of those apple desserts, one of the really great things to do is do a combination of apples. Don't just do one apple. And a Golden Delicious is one of those that goes really well. If you have something more tart and then you have the Golden Delicious in there and you add it in. And some people think that it's kind of a cousin of a Red Delicious apple. Actually, in fact, it's not. I mean, only insofar as all apples are cousins of other apples. It's not closely related to a Red Delicious apple. And it has, when it's very fresh, they have a almost a custardy texture. They're beautiful apples, and they go really well in mixtures. My favorite combination, actually, for like an apple crisp, I put Golden Delicious, I put Macintosh, and I put some Granny Smith.
Yeah, that's the green ones, yeah.
They're very tart, but they really hold their shape. The Macintosh, they have a tendency to, they get a lot softer when you bake them. So they're not a great baking apple on their own. They're great for making applesauce.
Yeah.
So different kinds of apples are good for different applications.
How about apple cider? What would be the best thing for making apple cider?
Do you know, I am not absolutely sure what the, they make, I know that they make combinations of different kinds of apples.
Yeah, because you were talking about hot toddies. I mean, a great thing for a hot cider, which I love hot cider as well.
Yeah, I love hot cider too, but you know that's an interesting question, and I'm not absolutely sure what
I think
varieties
for some
of
reason I think they do
ciders.
A little bit of everything because my wife and I went to the Big Apple up here in Wrentham a few weeks ago to pick some apples in the store though, but for some reason I think somebody was mentioning it. I overheard a woman saying what kind of apples in the apple cider, and I think they had said Macintosh. They had they all different Cortlands, and they all different. So I guess they it's a combination.
I think they blend. They blend the ciders, but I'm not sure which ones they pick. And then of course hard ciders, which is probably my favorite drink, at least right now. I love hard ciders.
Me too.
One of the companies I've noticed out in the Berkshires, is it Berkshire Cider Company or something like that? Anyhow, they actually have varietals. So they have cider that's made out of Baldwin's, and they have cider that's made out of, so they have particular apple varieties that they make the cider out of, and they do have really different flavors. Some are tartar, some are sweeter. There are some apples that even have kind of a gingery note to them, you know, so different apples that would definitely affect how cider would.
Yeah, I like the hard ciders these days as well. It doesn't matter what time of year it is.
Yeah,
anyways.
No, it doesn't matter what time of year it is for me either. So.
Well, we're coming down the wire. We've only got a few more minutes left. Before we leave, I know next month you'll be back with us again. Basically find out how people can get in touch with you guys if they want to get, doing a personal chef or they want to get some more information from you guys.
That's not a problem at all. We are on the web, It's mychef.lara.com.
Right.
And the phone number is 401-831-1657. And you can reach us by email, which is info at mychef.lara.com, and we are more than happy to get back to you within 24 hours. Not a problem, unless we are cooking or drinking mulled wine or eating some of those red apples. But I think we will definitely get back to all of the WARA listeners in a short period of time.
And last thing is Vermont rolling pins.
Yeah, that's a nice Christmas gift.
I mean, it all makes a nice Christmas gift. Next month, we can talk a little bit more about, you know, the holidays, the Christmas and stuff like that as we get closer to Thanksgiving and Christmas.
Thanksgiving, yes.
Yeah.
It is, it's basically now, as you said, it's soup making, apple pie making, mulled wine making. Now, I don't know if it was written on my sheet. It says holiday or holy day season.
It's holiday season.
Holiday season. Holiday season. All right. Holiday, holiday. It's all the same. You know.
Well, but that's where it came from.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
That's where it came from.
So now we can reveal the four soups we have.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Okay. So the first soup for My Chef Lara Soups and Friends Night, which is on November 14 at 4:30 in my house in Providence on the east side. So bring a spoon, bring a friend, and bring a bowl. That's it. Everything is for free. And we have 16 gallons of soup, 4 gallons of each. And the first and the most important one, the winner of last year, is the Hungarian goulash soup.
That's right, yeah.
And the runner-up and the second one will be repeated again is the shrimp and corn chowder. We have that. And then number three is a French vegetarian soup au pistou.
That sounds good.
Yep. And the last one is the one which we found at the Chopetition, is the Canadian beer cheese soup.
Whoa! It's right. You got that.
Whoa!
Yeah. And a little beer and wine on that one.
That's right. We have a very international lineup of soups this year.
Yes.
I'll say you do.
Yeah.
Wow. They all have to be tasted.
Yes.
They all have
absolutely
to be eaten, that's for sure.
And then we choose the winner for next year's soup night, and that will be repeated as usual. And we give prizes for the person with the biggest spoon and the most interesting bowl and the person who comes from the furthest traveled to our home. Yes.
All that and much more coming up very shortly. November the 14th.
Yes.
The soup tasting event. So hopefully people will get out there. And you can go to mychieflara.com for more details on that.
And you'll find that. Yes,
got it.
Absolutely.
Well, enjoy the rest of your day. We'll see you
next
month.
Thank you, Doug.
Happy Halloween to you.